Panama Papers was a coordinated journalistic investigation of 11 million leaked tax files from a Panama-based law firm, revealing money laundering and tax fraud on an industrial scale. It embroiled political leaders, business scions, corporations, celebrities, and resulted in the downfall of three serving prime ministers. Now, 8 years on, 27 people are on trial in Panama this week, including the alleged masterminds, the principals of the legal firm Mossack Fonseca. Gerald Ryle is the director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which coordinated the investigation and the publication of this explosive story across 76 countries at the same time, on the same day, in 2016. I spoke with Gerard yesterday.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Gerard, it's been 8 years since the release of the Panama Papers. It was a massive story. We all remember the name. But remind us, can you, what they were, these Panama Papers? What was the scale of the illegality?
Yeah, the documents themselves are about 11 and a half million records from this firm in Panama called Mossack Fonseca. And basically, it was 40 years of their records, of all of their clients, all of their dealings, all of the dealings of their clients. And it basically painted the biggest picture of how the secrecy works in the offshore world. And at the time, it was very explosive because no one had ever been able to see behind the curtain before of the secrecy.
Offshore tax havens and using offshore tax accounts is not necessarily illegal. Within this 11.5 million documents, how did you ascertain what was illegal and what was not? And how did the sort of the equation play out?
There was a lot of illegal activity happening. For instance, the firm itself was backdating documents. Probably the biggest shock was that they themselves didn't even know who their clients were. A lot of the clients were found by the journalists looking through the documents and matching their records with public records or other clues that we're able to find. By the end, we'd actually found 12 current or former world leaders and about 140 other politicians, and then like dozens of celebrities and other people.
And the impact from that investigation was immediate. The Prime Minister of Iceland, for one, was forced to quit after protesters outside Parliament House threw fruit and yogurt at him. Was he the highest profile casualty of the Panama Papers investigation?
It actually brought down three prime ministers.
Three?
The first to go was the Icelandic Prime Minister, but then about a year later, the Prime Minister of Pakistan was convicted. He went to jail for a while. He's now back.
As
the new leader of Pakistan. The third took longer again, and again it was surrounded in tragedy, and that was the Prime Minister of Malta. And that was after one of the journalists who'd been reporting on the Panama Papers was assassinated in Malta, which led to a huge scandal and eventually the downfall of the government there.
That assassination of the journalist, was that because that journalist was involved in this investigation?
She wasn't actually. She was the mother of our computer programmer who designed the system to share the documents. His mother was a blogger in Malta. And near the end of the project, when he was over there working with her, he had shared some of the details with her. And then she started her own investigations and continued to work building on our work and drew more conclusions from the documents, including links to people that we had named but we couldn't basically nail, and that was the Prime Minister and his Chief of Staff in Malta. But then almost a year later, or 9 months later, she got into her car and was blown to smithereens.
So the ripples are acute in some cases, not just change of law, but actually deadly.
Well, I mean, it changed laws in about 70 different countries and led to the investigations. And of course, then there was the various tax offices. Once they got a hold of the names that we published, they started knocking on doors around the world, including in Australia. It was $1.4 billion has been recovered so far from just us publishing the names of the people who were in the documents.
27 staff from the now defunct law firm Mossack Fonseca are on trial in Panama this week. What is this trial about, Gerard, and what are the charges faced by the two principals and their staff?
Look, it's very much a show trial. They've already faced prosecution on this before. In 2022, they were acquitted of, at that stage, again, the main charge here is money laundering. And their argument is that they were just the victims themselves of this system. They were just the fall guys, so to speak. What they did is that they set up these offshore companies and they equate themselves as like car dealers. They're saying that we just sold the cars and it wasn't our fault if someone drove the car out of the lot and then used it for, you know, getaway in a bank robbery. The first trial was in relation to a big scandal in Brazil where they were linked to that, which again we had published in 2016. And they got away with that and they basically were able to say that they were just the victims. And again, I think it's the same here. This second trial has really been pushed by the US authorities because of the number of Americans that they were helping to escape taxes.
One of the accused directors of the law firm, Jürgen Mossack, spoke outside the court this week, denying all allegations, as he has before, sounding pretty confident of an acquittal, I'd have to say. Do you think he will be acquitted on these charges? And do you believe his denials of guilt?
Well, I do think that they were guilty of illegal behaviour. I mean, when we first published this, everyone kept telling us, oh, well, this is all legal. Everything that's happening here is legal. And you've got to remember, every major bank in the world was involved in this because they were the ones bringing the clients to Mossack Fonseca. Mm. But after we published, I mean, people started going to jail and convictions happened. Mossack Fonseca itself had to close down 2 years after we published. And they themselves spent some time in jail on this originally. They've also avoided facing charges in countries where they know that they could actually go to jail. For instance, Germany has been trying to extradite them now for 8 years and they're refusing to leave Panama. The Panamanian authorities have taken action on this. They've now changed all of the rules. So no longer can you create a shell company without actually knowing who the client is. And it's, I guess, what Mossack Fonseca are now relying on is that the laws were changed after the Panama Papers and therefore, you know, they shouldn't be convicted for something that wasn't the law at the time.
It was the scale of the journalistic operation that made a difference in this story and that really captured the global attention, I think. You know, the 11.5 million files of these financial documents or the 2.6 terabytes of data, reporters from, I think I'm right in saying, more than 100 countries working on the story for many, many months, and then that coordinated global release. How did you do that? How did you get that started?
The background is that there were actually two leaks. The first leak happened in 2015, and this was someone who went to the German authorities with about a million documents from Mossack Fonseca. And he sold that material to the German government. We managed, with our media partner in Germany, Süddeutsche Zeitung, to get a hold of that first leak. That led to raids in banks in Germany. Mm-hmm. Our media partner in Germany wrote about that, and that led to a second source coming forward. This is the famous John Doe, basically came forward at that point. Now, John Doe had many more records than the first leak, so he had about 11.5 million. But it took a lot of coordination and also just a lot of luck along the way. John Doe gave us the documents about a million at a time, so you can imagine indexing these documents and then finding those, well, there's even more, so you have to start again. There were so many names from so many countries that we thought the only way we're going to be able to do this is to bring as many reporters in as possible and give them access to the documents for as long as possible and then publish together.
It was a new way of doing journalism on a scale like this. Has that since changed the ambition, the scope of what investigative journalism can achieve and perhaps has achieved since?
I think it's definitely a new way of doing journalism. It's not like it doesn't work for every story.
No.
I mean, to make this work, you really have to have unique information for each country to get the journalists interested. When I was building the collaboration, for instance, I initially had to go to Germany to talk to the German newspaper because I needed to get them on side. And then I flew from Munich over to London to get the Guardian and the BBC on side. And then once I had those three, I knew it would be easier to get the smaller newspapers and publications involved because they like to be part of something big. But I mean, the way to do this, we had to reinvent everything. We were also a very small nonprofit, so we had no money. We couldn't, we couldn't do things that we do these days. So we ended up, you know, using open source software, for instance, to build an online newsroom that had originally been designed as a dating website. And then to share the documents, we used open source software that had been designed for librarians to share books and book titles. And that was the work that the computer programmer whose mother was eventually murdered, that's the kind of work he was doing.
Jared, not many journalists can claim that they've changed the world, but has the release of the Panama Papers had the impact that you'd hoped? And could financial tax evasion, fraud, wealth protection schemes of this scale occur today?
Oh, they're certainly occurring still, again, in a much more sophisticated way. But we have managed to get bigger leaks since. I mean, we did the Pandora Papers in 2021 involving like 600
journalists. That was even more documents, wasn't it?
Even more documents, 13 different firms involved. And we've published other Paradise Papers a year after Panama Papers, which really looked at major corporations, big, US corporations that were avoiding tax. I do think we have broad pressure. I do think that there will be a universal tax now imposed on companies eventually. I think they're talking about 15%. It sounds really small, but when you're paying nothing now, 15% is something at least.
That's true, but they have been talking about that for a while now.
Yeah. They've been talking about it, but again, we've always learned that the story that doesn't go away is the one that actually gets action from governments, because you need to continue to put the pressure on governments. And I do think that this trial is reminding people of the anger they felt back in 2016 when people just got on the streets. I mean, you mentioned, Iceland. I mean, within literally hours in Iceland, people had surrounded the parliament building there, demanding action and bringing down the prime minister there. That really then ignited all the stories around the world.
Jared, thanks for joining me on Saturday Extra.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And what a story it was. Jared Ryle, director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.